Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
And welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. This week, Ridley Scott offers up The Martian, based on Annie Ware's best-selling novel. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Marissa Serafini.
Hello, everyone.
Zach Wilson.
Hey, guys.
Dimitri Panos.
Hello, movie fans.
And Sarah Stretton.
Hello.
So what do we think? Are we happy that they brought him home, or should they have left him stranded on Mars? Give me your thoughts overall right now. What's up?
I'm happy that they brought them home, because the whole promo was bring him home. So and they did. So I'm like, all right, you live up to
so
yours.
For you, the movie actually did bring it home.
Yeah, I mean, we had that whole slow process of like the going and how to actually execute the mission to get him back, and they finally executed it and did it.
I don't know. We left him there. We could have gotten an easier sequel.
It's true.
No, I really loved the movie.
By the way, anybody? I'm sorry to interrupt, but who has read the book? Everybody?
Right, I have.
We have.
Okay, we got three and two who haven't. All right, so go ahead.
Well, I love the book.
Right.
I read it months ago. Mm-hmm. And so coming in to it, the best compliment I can say is this is one of the most faithful adaptations of a
absolutely
novel I have seen in years.
Yeah. I would agree with that completely. What do you think, Dimitri?
This is, since Robinson Crusoe on Mars, this is...
by the way, it's very underrated.
Right. Being stranded on the red planet has never been so much fun. I really enjoyed this movie a lot. I read the book, it wasn't by design, but I had actually just finished
there
the book.
Go. Thank you, Zach.
Days before I went to go see the movie. Mm-hmm. You know,
did you want to read it just to get it read before the movie, or did you?
You know, it was recommended by a good friend of mine. Uh-huh. We have similar tastes in books, and he had said like a little while ago that it's a book that I would enjoy.
Right.
And so I found it on Barnes & Noble as an ebook and got it for a good price, and I read it, and I really enjoyed it. It's a good, easy, solid read. I too found that it was a decent adaptation. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit later on about some of the differences. There were some things they changed that I was on board with. Other things that I wasn't so much on board with. Ridley Scott. This is really he was back in great form. And watching the movie, it made me think. You know, the past 3 years. As a moviegoer, as a science fiction lover, we've been blessed to have, like, so 2 years ago
Gravity.
We had Gravity, which, you know, just broke open, just opened these doors to, like, giving us something that we'd never seen before. Then we have Interstellar, another clever, you know, love it or hate it, it still gave you something to talk about, and it looked amazing on the big screen. And this movie with Ridley Scott, again, just another solid science fiction movie that looked fantastic on premium large format theater 3D. It sounded great. It's just solid science fiction. So had a good time.
Sarah?
I did not read this book beforehand. Went in just knowing the comparisons. All I had heard about it was like, it's Gravity, but instead of being technically good, it's like has a story. That's what I heard. And so I went in and really enjoyed it. It was long, and in the middle I remember thinking like, wow, I feel like this is kind of dragging a bit. And then I was like, wait, I actually appreciate that this movie feels long, because I think his journey is supposed to feel long. Mm-hmm. I think if we had breezed through this experience, it wouldn't have carried the weight. I really liked how they added a bit of lightness with his humor and with the music. It really kept me invested. Also, of course, just the signature of this movie is it's I guess, dedication to science and adding rooted those fun science facts. Like, I am not, I cannot claim to be a science person. that is not what
you can claim it.
I
wouldn't buy it.
I can't claim it.
I think the term science person says it all.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
there.
There you go.
Scientist.
I'm just not. Like, I stopped after high school. But it was still engaging for me. I still understood what was going on. I didn't get lost in the technical dialogue. And so I thought that that was really impressive because it does center, so much of the dialogue centers around what NASA's doing, what he's experimenting on. And I didn't feel overwhelmed with it. And I felt it was really engaging for an audience that was had a wide range. So I was a pleasure to see this movie. And I think it's really easy to recommend. I think coming out of it, it was really easy to be like, yes, I think most people would really enjoy this film. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see what you all have to say about
it. Well, I thought it had a really good balance of the human story as well as the nerdosity, if I may use the term. and I also agree with you about the length, because some people have said it's too long and stuff like that. But I did feel the same way, is that you needed that sense, I think, that it helps not only with the isolation, but it gives you the impact that they can't get back there for 400 days or whatever the hell the numbers are. And you have to somewhat feel that.
And it's funny. I didn't feel that.
I didn't either, but I get why people say that. But and it might have been because I read the book, because I was just so interested in everything. That, this is – and it reminded me of when I read the book, because for me, I couldn't put the book down. I just kept reading the thing.
It's such an easy read. But, I mean, again, look, going into this, we were just sitting down. I thought this movie was only 2 hours.
And there are two-hour movies that feel a lot longer than this.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you were saying that it was 2:22. And, in fact, I actually thought they were – I actually thought they did rush through. Mm-hmm. I mean, because the book puts him through so much conflict. And there were – that was one of the things, too, that I was wondering. I would have liked to have seen, because to me his journey seemed almost too easy.
You mean the part when he's actually traveling, or the whole thing? See, I agree with you on that. That there was so much that happened on the ride over.
Yeah.
That we
didn't
get to see.
Well, at least one major incident happened in the book that didn't happen here. Yeah, yeah. And I almost said, geez, I was like going, they're almost making it too easy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I understand cinematic wise, but we'll talk about differences later. But I didn't feel that this movie was a 2-hour and 20-minute movie to me. Mm-hmm.
I think what helped with that was because if we were to just watch Watney alone on the planet, I felt like this movie was more Apollo 13 meets Castaway. If we had him completely alone on the planet without going back and forth from Earth to Mars and back and forth, without that balance, it would have felt like a long movie. And I think that's where the balance helped, where we saw so many people just actually trying to figure out how to get him back.
Yeah, it... The only time it dragged, like, I guess, like, around, like, between the second and third act, like, about two-thirds of the way through the movie, it got a little slow, where I was like, this has been going on. But it never felt like I was waiting for the end. Like, even knowing how the plot's going to go, I was still engaged. I was worried about this character.
Isn't that weird?
I'm worried about everyone. And it was just, it was a blast to watch. Yeah. It was, the science of it, there's been a lot of talk about how it's, one of the more accurate movies when it comes to how a scientist goes through the process of problem solving, not
and
just
making mistakes.
and not just like, oh, I know how to fix this, and then like doing a couple things, banging on some canisters, and stuff falls into place. Like, no, this is a scientific procedure where you're going to have to go through and analyze every piece of the process. And you're going to have to go through trial and error to make stuff work.
Blow yourself up.
Yeah. Because that's what happens in science.
Exactly.
You blow stuff up.
And it's funny because, you know, I found
Mythbuster.
You know, JPL. JPL had written articles about this movie, and JPL factors in this movie very much. But listen, if they're not going to be writing articles about this movie if they didn't condone the movie. Mm-hmm. And JPL, you know, felt that they were making...
Yeah.
That the Martian was making, you know, this sort of trip to Mars like a reality using actual technology.
NASA really got on board,
NASA too.
Because they don't always help at all. They're notoriously So anyway, but they helped greatly because they saw not only was it steeped in the science of it, but it was...
And again, it really does go for science fiction.
And it was great that NASA discovered water on Mars just before. They probably held that, you know? Let's wait.
Do you think the producers were sitting there, afraid for their lives because, like, what if something they announced just... destroyed the science of the Martian.
Well, if I were the producers, I would have said, well, Mark Watney invented water.
Exactly.
I would have gone over the book. But, you know, it's great because it's all about, like, again, great science fiction is always about the human condition and survival. Like, you know, that is deeply rooted in the human condition. And his, you know, this was type of a survival of being... You know, Mark Watney was a smart guy, okay? Like, in the book, and this is, again, I'm surprised that in the book, he not only was he a botanist, but he minored in engineering. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all these astronauts that were in space, in NASA, they were smart people. Mm-hmm. Like, and I appreciate that. And working out these problems in a way, like Sarah, you said earlier, in a way that you know, schmuck like me can understand and go, yeah, because I would have been dead. I would have eaten the food and like going, I would have been like, I can't fetch.
You never would have made it on the ship. I mean,
where Sarah said she's not a science person. I am not a math person, and trying to figure out like. Well, I got to grow potatoes, but I need... Like, I know H2O. I know H2O, but how do I get those two particles of hydrogen and oxygen, put them together? And so I would have said, oh, I'm fucked. I'm dead.
You don't just have a test tube with hydrogen and a test tube with oxygen and you pour?
You just go to the tap.
Yeah, you go to the tap. Yeah. So awesome. That, to me, you know, it makes this a very accessible movie. And again, who doesn't like the human condition of survival? And having Mark Watney, who had that sense of humor going on.
Yeah, the snarkiness was amazing.
I wish there was more. You had mentioned about the music. And I think that the music was both score and source. Was great because the music, to me, it felt like Guardians of the Galaxy. Because they used a lot of source music that we all have heard before. Mm-hmm. It just grounds it into reality. So it makes it a little bit more, like, palatable. So, like, you can go, well, he's listening, of course. Like, it's not psychedelic sci-fi music. This is, like, 70s disco music. And we've heard the songs before, so it roots it. It grounds it. So
yeah, it's easy to grasp. It's easy, I mean, you look at this music and this soundtrack as opposed to... I know for me, when I think of a movie like Interstellar, which came out last year, you think of the sound effects. You think of how space amplified sound. You think about how
gravity
they
did that
made...
Gravity great, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You think about those sound effects versus this, what you feel... is that disco vibe, the soul of it, and that's what carried this movie through, was your attachment to character, your attachment to even the characters that wasn't present. Yes, this is a story about space, but when I line them up, especially like looking at this compared to like Gravity, when you line them up, this is much more about identifying with the character, identifying alone, whereas that's kind of gasping at awe at the vastness of space.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
And to add to that, even the soundtrack names, I mean, Turn the Beat Around and Happy Days and whatnot, they're subtle moments to let the audience know it's all about positive. Yeah. About positivity. All these are positive songs to keep the character going and keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think Mark Watney's self-endurance, like, that's another great thing, too, about this movie that is relatable. I think anybody who is a survivor of anything... or who may be going through something that they may have to, quote-unquote, survive. You know, this is what makes great science fiction as well. Mark Watney he's a survivor. Like, he wants to, like, even though, like, he might make a mistake, right? He'll go, okay, he'll lament about it for a while, and then he'll go, okay, I gotta fix this. And again, he goes, I gotta science the shit out of this. Yeah. And
work the problem.
And I gotta work out I gotta work the problem out. And both in the book and in the movie, you know, he works the problem out. Now, the book was filled with a ton of formulas that, in all honesty, there was a time I was like, going, okay, whatever.
I geeked out on my life. Yeah. I was like, well, wait a minute here.
Well, I understood what he was understood why he was doing it in the book. Mm-hmm. Like, I go, okay, that makes perfect sense. But when it came down where he was actually doing the formulas, I was like, okay, whatever. Yeah. You know, but in the movie, you don't necessarily have to do that. You can sort of kind of like, oh, well, I need to do this, this, this. And you understand. But it's a great story of survival, perseverance, and mm-hmm. having that spirit. And good science fiction, it's not a downer. Mm-hmm. We've had downer science fiction before.
Post-apocalyptic stuff.
Yeah. This is really about persevering mm-hmm. and being positive, and it's a really great message.
And oddly enough, what Ridley Scott says, it's also about loneliness and the flip side of that, because even in his loneliest moments, they were connected to people who were trying like crazy to get him back. So I think for Ridley, it was about that we're always connected in some fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. That was his deal.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I think what was great, and the book like made a more specific like point about this, but the movie didn't need to, was just his sense of humor and how important it was
to survive.
To everything. Like to that a person who couldn't laugh at misfortune couldn't have that.
That would be
the gallows humor.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have survived this because you needed to be able to just like
say, what else are you going to do? You got to laugh at it because the rest of it's tragic.
Yeah, you need to be able to say like Mars just fucked me.
Exactly. That's the first line. Yeah, I'm fucked.
And I almost wish that the movie opened up that way. I'll be honest. I wish that the movie had opened up that way.
They would have got an R,
and it did get an R.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought it was PG-13. Anyway, well, because they
I think for PG-13, you're allowed one F word, and then all the other references to the F word, it was bleeped out,
or you can
take that shot. Away where you see him, you can see him actually say
but you can't hear him.
So. Yeah, well, I mean, I'll put it either way. I wish they had had that as the opening and take out the. Like,
yeah, because it would have been that really set stuff. For me. That set the whole book up.
And this would have set the movie up in a great way too.
But yeah, I mean, I still worked for me the way it was done. Let's talk more about story, because one of the things that I always use as a benchmark for an adaptation is how not only how faithful it is, but you already know the story. Mm-hmm, you know how it's turning out,
right.
and if you're bored by the movie, then they didn't do a good adaptation. But if, like you were just saying. You know what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm still in my seat. I'm anxious. I'm crying. I'm laughing. And I know everything.
Yeah.
And it still works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's good filmmaking to me.
I agree. I mean, it was a decent adaptation. And you're right. If you go in knowing what's going to happen. But for me, I think, like I said, I had read it just prior to just a few days before going to see it. So for me, it was sort of kind of comfortable. Because here I am back with these characters again. Mm-hmm. And they changed some characters. But story-wise movie, like we had talked at the top, it was... It's palpable. It can cross section and get everybody in.
But here's the thing: it's very formulaic, but it works
absolutely to an extent.
I think what I enjoyed about this movie is, yes, we knew that eventually they were going to bring him home, but the fun, entertaining part of this movie was the whole process and their mental. How they went about each situation and how if they changed one thing to the formula, they had to change three other aspects.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's what I enjoyed, because that's what like real scientists, real engineers would go through, that whole mental process of figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was fun to watch. I loved the stuff, like just all the pieces of communicating with the Earth, and like this stuff on the Earth was just as compelling because you're watching politics start to unfold and like all the pieces of this world that we're in.
I thought that was actually better in the film than the book, because in the book I didn't really get the sense of the globalness of it and how many, you know, I know obviously China's involved in it, but I thought they did a better job in the film of visualizing that, or I should say doing a good job cinematically showing me that, because I didn't get that feeling in the book as much as I did in the movie.
I thought they did a really good job of making that kind of relationship complex, especially tying in not only the political side, but just the timing of when to tell the other crew, or the differences of opinion, and how they would switch between, like, they weren't, I liked how they didn't show him sending the hidden message about I liked how that was kind of left ambiguous, about how it was the crew figuring it out. It wasn't that every single detail of what was going on politically or going on with the bosses had to be explicitly shown.
No.
We didn't need to go through the step-by-step of, this is him sending a message, and this is them encoding it. They kind of just let you flow through, and to me that made it seem more realistic. I didn't need to see it from every angle because... And I felt like they did that really well with that whole side, with the crew on the Hermes,
mm-hmm.
with everything going on at NASA, with things going on in China. That was a section that they didn't dive too deeply in. The majority of this film is really spent with Matt Damon.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, mm-hmm. I think it would have been really easy for them to make this movie going through every detail on all those other points, trying to fill up time with other characters and other relationships. But I like that it was there. I like the complications that it added. I like the relationships, the politics that it added. But it also showed me that they made a really strong movie just with the character of, like, Matt Damon and the Martian, because I enjoyed his alone bits.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to see what was going on with a family life or mm-hmm. with a girlfriend. Like, it was strong enough watching him with the science, watching him with the comedy.
Do you think that was because they took the time in those moments where he didn't say anything, but you knew what he was feeling, the desperation and the isolation and the sense, just when he was just falling to tears? Because a lot of times they won't take those moments in movies like this, and I think it was really important mm-hmm. that they did.
Well, I agree, but I think, well, Andy Ware made a conscious decision not to give him a relationship back home outside mm-hmm. of, he did make yeah. him like family.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, I think that's like, there wasn't, he had self-preservation mm-hmm. in mind. I need to survive this. And it wasn't necessarily, you know, for a wife and family back mm-hmm. home. Not that that's a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
but I think for the self-perseverance, like, you know, he needed to be sort of kind of selfish
mm-hmm.
and you don't tether him to like, oh, he's doing this for the family.
Mm-hmm.
So being, you know, he has his mom and dad and he mm-hmm. writes that very nice note and whatnot. But having him, I mean, if number one, it isolates him a little bit more because he doesn't have a family yeah, so much to go back to.
That huge motivator, especially if you're a child.
Right. And so I think that making that conscious decision from the author's part, I thought that was good because
yeah.
it gave the survival instinct.
It makes it even harder,
right,
in a sense.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah it's more yeah. impressive that he was pushing yeah. through all this.
Yes.
Not for, like, somebody else.
Right.
Just for him. Because the whole thing of the survival story that, like, you see, like,
mm-hmm.
in this, like, an easy comparison is Castaway.
Yeah.
Like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is going to be Matt Damon sort of Castaway, even though, like, half the movie is other people. But it's different because at a certain point, like, he's just on his own, whereas Tom Hanks was like staring at a picture of someone
and
he's hopeful
he had Wilson,
for.
So he was right. never alone.
Yeah. yeah.
And this, he has potatoes.
Yeah. potatoes.
He has, and like, yeah, and he has
Spud. Spud.
I was kind of waiting for that moment.
Were you?
Yeah. Just a little but, bit.
And he even lost the ketchup, man.
Yeah.
Right
now.
Man. Yeah. Well, he ate it.
I just have to throw this, you know, making the movie to book or book to movie comparison. Like, why? And again, this is one of those things. He had so much potatoes. Like, in the book, he said, if I ever
yeah.
have a potato, like, he goes, I hate potatoes, but that's what kept him alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why didn't the movie, like, a line of dialogue?
Well, like they did in Castaway when he's at, and he comes home and they're having the big celebration for him and he picks up the crab and he just goes like that because
yeah.
he's not interested in crab.
And apparently Andy, I believe it was Andy, had written a suggestion to,
mm-hmm.
like, Drew Goddard and mm-hmm. to Ridley saying, you know, maybe in the epilogue when
yeah.
he comes back, we can have him go to, like, a McDonald's
oh, yeah.
and go, can I have a Big Mac and a Coke?
Well,
don't you want fries? No. And I thought that's sort of funny.
Rice.
But
Rice
they couldn't just
don't. Rice is my we side. Did not need that, but
no,
it's
but
a
it's
funny.
Funny.
Well, speaking
it's
of the epilogue,
idea.
What did you guys think? You guys weren't familiar with the book, so did the epilogue work for you? Did you need the epilogue?
I personally didn't need
mm-hmm.
the epilogue. Not to say that I didn't enjoy it, but
mm-hmm.
it didn't. It's not a stand-up feature in the movie for me. It's not going to be a scene that I really hold on to. What's interesting, though, is they have... This is getting a little off topic, but they have released a deleted scene
mm-hmm.
within the week since it's released. And in this deleted scene, if you guys haven't seen it, you can find it online. It's really easy to find. But he mentions having a class or like it's him on Mars and he's completing the experiments of the crew, and he says, "But really, this should be in the survival guide of."
So that would tie it at that.
So it ties in. Mm-hmm. So I could see why, like it had been mentioned in part of the script that kind of got removed. Because for me, it didn't tie in anywhere, but I see that it had the grounds to. We just didn't get to see them. And it wasn't something that hurt the film for me. It was just not... I will probably forget that there was an epilogue. Mm-hmm. Like, when I think about this movie, I'm going to be like, oh, right. And then
I enjoyed it.
The question I have is, where do you believe the epilogue begins? Does it begin when they start showing where everybody lands the next few years after, or do you believe the epilogue to be him in class?
I think for the purpose of the discussion, the class and the end is the epilogue, right?
Yes. Well, see, for me, it starts when they start showing where everybody is.
3 years later, whatever the hell
it is. Yeah, like however many years later, because none of that was in the book, including the class. So I don't know. For me, that's where that started, because it was like, okay, we didn't... Yeah. This wasn't in the book, but
I liked it because, I mean, I found out after the fact that that was also added, but I liked because we spent so much time with Watney, we actually got this small amount of time spending with everyone else in their personal lives, and also ended the movie on a positive note. And despite this mishap that happened with leaving someone on Mars, it gave the audience and everyone else the optimism that they're still going to launch another mission, is going to be successful, and everyone's still rooting. So, like, they're moving on with their lives and learning from the past.
I did think it was really interesting to watch all of the astronauts watching the next launch. Mm-hmm. That part of the epilogue I really liked. I think that just being able to put your own thoughts on whatever you thought they were thinking. Because, like, for me, it did range. Like, I could put the opinions on some wanting to be there, some lucky that they're never going back. And I liked that moment, that moment of closure and kind of going through. The class part in particular, I just felt was a little long and a little like, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't necessarily dislike or hate the ending, including the class and the epilogue. I also didn't need it. Mm-hmm. The class felt a little bit forced to me. In that, like, oh, look, he's, like, trained. And, it wasn't even that it wasn't class itself. It was if it hadn't ended on that moment of every student raising their hand at once for a question, which was a little too cheesy for a very, like, realistic movie at all steps of the process.
That,
like,
wasn't very scientific.
Yeah. Well, like, I get, like, a lot of hands, but it was, like, every hand.
It was very contrived.
It was just a little cheesy. I kind of would have preferred if that was just... of seeing him teaching a class was another part of the epilogue and the montage, dialogue, and we didn't need the... Because, like, I love in the book how it just ends with him going, like, he's like, man, I must smell like a skunk that took a shit in a dirty sock. And that's, like, a great... It's a funny moment and just, like, a meaningful moment as he, like, just breaks down and, like, in this relative safety, comparatively, at least, to what he's been in. Right. There was also one moment in the epilogue that sort of stuck out to me that bothered me a little bit. It was Michael Pena. This guy just got back from a double mission, basically, because of the wraparound. And he's on the next Ares mission. Yeah. Like, from one standpoint, his wife would, like, he's divorced
now. He's the
best
pilot.
But also, like, the Ares 4 mission got scrapped.
Right.
So that crew, because that crew would have already been in place and chosen, would have probably just gotten pushed to the Ares 5 mission, so that somebody else just got displaced. And also beyond that, just like, again, just for a very realistic movie, there's no way his body would be ready to go back into space that quickly after a double mission. Like, he would have months and years of rehab.
We don't know how long it is. We don't know.
We didn't.
I was surprised by the epilogue and the fact that it's like, I don't need any of this. I don't know why we're doing this. I didn't hate it, but I was like, we don't need it.
Yeah.
And you know what I would have preferred? It's just a moment. Because I like the moment on the bench when people are realizing who he is and they're, you know, saying... Sir, and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of cool. Or I would have liked just to seen his face when he saw Earth the first time when he was coming back.
Yeah.
That would have been cool, and then I would have been out. I didn't need any of that, and I was kind of, I was surprised that they kept it in.
It seemed a little tacked on. It did. It seemed tacked on.
Yeah.
So.
All right, now the other thing that's different from the book that a lot of people are talking about is the Iron Man stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man's not part of the book at all.
Oh!
No, wait, well, he suggests it in a very funny way. And yeah, it wasn't, he suggested it. And I think he did it, and again, in the book to me, it was funnier because his acerbicness, his sarcasm comes out. He's like, hey, I can do this and I'd be like Iron Man. Yeah. And they're like, you know, the commander's like, no. He goes, come on, Iron Man. And they're like, no.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, okay, that okay. They said no. And, you know, he uses it in the movie. And I'm like going, this is just, I go, it's not exciting enough that he's in this capsule, like, that's threadbare, and that they need to catch him and try to go, like, that's not exciting enough. He has to get out and cut his
your
thing.
Lead. He's Matt Damon. We got to have him flying around like
that. The only thing that
I think
they really
wanted that moment with Jessica Chastain. They wanted that moment where she had to go get him because she left him on the planet.
Because that was a change. Sebastian Stan's character.
Yeah, and that's his... And again, what I really liked about this movie, too, is that crew. Again, there were a lot of things that reminded me of Star Trek. But that crew, they all had their expertise, okay? The commander knew what their expertise was, and it's like, okay, you do this, you got to make a bomb because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Beck, I want you out there because you're the best person who's, you know, you're best to fit for that job to grab him in. And that's how a crew works. I didn't mind that they had Jessica Chastain pull a Captain Janeway because that is what a Janeway would do. It's her crew. She felt responsible. And I like that a captain will be like a little roguish, like a Captain Kirk or Janeway, to get out there and I'm going to bring my crew back in. And I like that fact that the whole Iron Man thing was, you know, you didn't need to make it more exciting. It was already exciting to me.
Yeah, I thought about the scene afterwards, and I realized that for me, it's very easy to nitpick. Mm-hmm. I think I could really nitpick their rescue, but I think that I was just so happy when he was getting rescued that during watching it, it didn't bother me. During sitting in the scene for the first time, him doing the whole Iron Man thing didn't bother me. Seeing them wrapped in that orange cord like 1,000 times in a very strange way didn't bother me at the time. Looking back, like, I feel a little bad for Beck that he, like, couldn't go do his job. But in the course of the movie, for where they had me at emotionally by that point of really wanting him to be saved, I didn't really care how they got there. I just, like, I was willing to kind of suspend my belief whether I believed he could actually do the Iron Man thing, whether I believed with doing the Iron Man thing he could catch them when she ran out of, like, when she misses his hands, like, all of these things, because they had built up my emotions enough to want him to be saved and to really care. Yeah. Afterwards, when I'm like, oh, he's saved and it's fine, I'm kind of like, huh, they really were excessive
how they
did that.
When they were reading the book, really's going, hey, we could do that. We could do that. Right. That'd be easy for us. That'd be cool.
Yeah
let's get him out there.
Yeah.
It's Matt Damon. Let's do this.
Yeah, somebody in there was like, I don't know if it was Damon, I don't know if it was Scott. It was just like, let's do it.
Yeah.
I think it's weird, like, because in cartoons where, like, in Wally, where he has the fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
It's like, it felt like that moment, and they tried to make it as real as possible.
Which they used in, what other movie did
Wally.
They use it in?
Wally did that.
Yeah, there's
Wally
another one.
Is the fire extinguisher, and...
No, they used
Gravity.
It's Gravity.
Oh, yeah, Gravity did that. Yeah.
But theirs was in a much more serious way. This was in the tone of...
But it's interesting. Okay, I, as you all know, I am a huge fan of Gravity. And I think from a visceral standpoint, I think Gravity was more allegorical than The Martian here. But there was that scene, the wrapping around of the cords. I was just rewatching Gravity the other day, and...
she's in the field.
There's
position.
The scene where there's the scene where Clooney has to unclip.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And again, that was just like science was being used because in the book it's explained why Beck couldn't. He had to wait until the right time to pull them in because, well, gravity was sort of kind of working against him. And had he tried, because if you notice, Beck was just waiting for them to, like, connect and sort of kind of be together and not let that tension. Because as they were separated apart, they're both actually at a momentum going away. And had Beck tried, it would have broken the seal and they would have been flying off. So he had to wait until they actually got together. So I was like, oh, there's the gravity moment sort of kind of. And I really appreciated that they stuck to that. And they were using, again, the science of, like, the physics of space and stuff like that. And, you know, and again, I had no problem with Jessica Chastain. I thought she was fantastic. I thought she was really good, really, you know, and it's great. You know, we're talking Hollywood where right now there's a lot of talk going on about inequality from male to female roles, pay and whatever. And this is a really good, this is a somewhat good movie. I mean, we could talk about Kristen Wiig's character who well, I think we have to.
Like, now we have to.
Not compared to who she was in the book.
Oh, I thought that she was spot on. I mean, she didn't have nearly the presence that she had.
That's the problem.
But that's not on the character or how the character, at least in the specific scenes, was written. I thought that she captured, for me at least, she captured Annie perfectly.
Yeah, but she
just didn't have as many scenes as she had in the book.
She became a non-issue. Like, she didn't, in the book, she was her opinions
much
counted.
More of a force.
Yeah, much more of a force. But Jessica Chastain's character, and maybe this was, maybe writing her as the savior was an outcropping to say, hey, let's have her, you know, maybe that was factored into Drew Goddard and Ridley Scott while they were doing it.
I like the fact that her character had a redemption moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my problem with the connection of the characters is, like, even at the very first scene of the movie, we hear Watney's voice and he's bothering everyone, just saying with his, you know, commentary. They already turned him off. So, like, there's somewhat of a disconnect from the crew to him.
Disconnect.
And
nice.
Then I feel like watching the movie, we didn't spend enough time with the actual crew themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And to establish that really deep connection that, wow, we left our own man on a planet. Let's go back for him. I didn't feel that. I felt like, oh, we left our friend there. We should go back. We're obligated. But I didn't feel that emotional connection, like, we left our best friend on the planet.
Hmm.
What's wrong with this?
Interesting.
I want to actually go back for a second because I was not really aware. I didn't read the book, so I don't know what the role of Kristen Wiig could have potentially been. All I got to see was how she's portrayed on film. So it's really interesting for me to hear that there's kind of an argument about her screen time. Because for me, it seemed what they did with her role, instead of, I'm not sure if in the book she was more of a catalyst for action or for plot or whatnot, but in the film I saw her more as like an emotionally based character, where like why she was there was not charged by getting actual press out there to do that, but it was more of to gauge where the audience felt about him being stranded. Like, it felt like she was kind of on that line between half being the civilian perspective of wanting to save them or figure this out, and half wanting to do what NASA had to say or had to do for publicity. So that's kind of where she felt into the formula for me, because since we didn't have a relationship or really family ties for Matt Damon's character, she kind of, for me, was like half in the, well, should we tell the crew?
Yeah.
Should we do this? We have a man out there.
The conduit.
What the public is going to think about this while also balancing.
I think in the book they just did a much better job of using her as a device for conflict and drama.
Right.
And
interesting.
They kind of pushed her to the side a little bit, but I thought her character, as Zach was saying, I thought she portrayed it well. It wasn't that. It was
that she portrayed it well.
They didn't use enough.
She was the voice of the audience.
Conflict?
I wanted a little bit more of it because there wasn't really anybody that challenged Jeff Daniels' character.
Well, can I throw this out though?
I wanted it in terms of what he was going to. People would say stuff, but they'd wait. And then okay, fine.
Well, but I throw this out there? Yeah. Again, we read the book, so to me, a main difference, and I don't understand why they changed this, is so Sean Bean's character, Mitch.
Right.
Like, for me, that character in the book was the person that he was the cheerleader for, like, the crew of the Hermes and for Mark Watney.
Yeah.
Okay. And they sort of, in the book, Teddy's sort of an asshole. Like, he's like the guy that's like, no, we can't tell the crew of the Hermes. And like, his reasoning would sound logical, but then when you get somebody like Mitch going, no, that's really not for you to call. Like, no, they have to know. And he championed them. Mm-hmm. And there was even a part in the book where Annie, like, it was that big argument that they had.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I think there wasn't enough challenging conflict.
There wasn't enough challenge.
I wanted more.
I wanted that challenge, too, because Ted really comes off as being like, how are you in NASA? Like, because, like... Because
he knows, like, the politics. Well, he's good at that.
But again, it was the politics over the human mm-hmm. aspect of it. And Annie, like, at the end of that thing, everybody files out of the room mm-hmm. except for Annie. And he goes, wow, what about that Mitch guy? Because Mitch really chews him out in the book, even more so in the book than in the movie. And then Annie just looks at Teddy and goes, you're an effing coward. And then she walks. She goes, that's what I feel. You know, you should have taken this route. Yes. And that makes
Which
her such a strong...
Which they gave the line to Mitch rather than to her. So that well, kind but, of thing I was going,
but
why?
But Mitch says that first in the book, too. Right. Yeah. He says it, and she just, like, repeats what he says to him. And it was, like, it was great conflict because you can make up your mind as mm-hmm. to...
Who's right, who's wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that moment with Annie is great, and it was a great moment in the book. But just like we had, like, on the stuff on Mars, like when he goes into the crater, and like in the book, he rolls the rover, and he has to write it, and it's a huge point. And while I missed seeing that because I was looking, I mean, it was a big point. I also didn't. It wasn't needed for the movie, and like while I would have loved to see that scene, I didn't miss it while I was watching the movie.
So because they had the scene, they could have just ramped up the conflict a little bit.
Yeah, it would have.
And maybe it's on a cutting room floor somewhere.
It could be.
It's already,
but it's the same amount of time. You just have to ramp it sooner.
I think they added. They maybe gave the impact of that scene to another scene when blowing up the Hab. So, and I think that really just amped everything up, in my mm-hmm. opinion, because it shows just now how dire this mission is, that he literally has no food to survive off of. So, and I think that's where the bigger conflict came from instead of just the rover.
I mean, for me, as I mentioned earlier that I really enjoyed the amount of time that they really devote to mm-hmm. Matt Damon's character, as opposed to... the politics and whatnot. So for me, I almost feel like they had to cut some things, and I would have rather them... To me, there was enough problems with mm-hmm. NASA and with everything. They made it clear that they had a disagreement about how to tell the public, about mm-hmm. how to tell the other crew, about how to figure out how to get a probe up there, about how to deal with international relationships. Like... Those are huge problems mm-hmm. that they probably could have put more detail into, but because they had so many things to deal with, I didn't need all of them supercharged.
Right.
Because that would have made it, to me, a movie too much about them, and not as... And what instead we got was a movie that was much more about Matt, and that's what I wanted to see.
I still think it would have been successful. I think it would have been more mm-hmm. successful if they... Because it's not adding screen time. Those scenes were already in place. They just... For me, they just could have ramped those things up. Because then you... For me, you would have had... Look, all this is happening, and we still have the problem that we have to work, and we're not working it because we got caught up in this. So I think it would have just added to the drama. I don't think it would have supplanted it.
And again, I was partial to the Mitch character in the book, mm-hmm. and I wanted a little bit more of him because as a reader, I was on Mitch's side mm-hmm. of the argument going, you know, yeah, you take less of a risk. You know, instead of high risk, you go low risk. But yes, there is the possibility that six people, mm-hmm. you know, in the Hermes. I was for Mitch's character. I didn't really appreciate, like, that whole thing that the mystery, you know, the mystery email mm-hmm. that comes through. I mean, that happened in the book. But, you know, and Mitch and Ted have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Mitch is like... Ted pretty much says, I know that you did, you know, sent the email, and Mitch in the book was like, I don't know what you're talking about. He goes, well, I'm gonna work and find that you did, and blah, blah, blah. And Mitch is like, fine, you take up your time doing that. I'm gonna take the time to get these men home. And in the end, Mitch's decision was right. And in the movie, his decision was right, and yet he's still forced to retire, which sort of kind of bothers me.
You can't
me.
Go against a bureaucrat.
Yeah,
well, because it is a certain sense of mutiny, and like, yes, it worked out in this case, but that does not make the decision
putting all
right.
those lives at risk.
Like, if he had, he could have been wrong. And if he had been wrong, if Rich Purnell hadn't been perfect...
Rich Purnell.
I mean, I love Donald Glover in that role.
But he was amazing.
If he hadn't been perfectly accurate, yeah, they would have all died because of that decision. Yeah. It did lead to, I think, my biggest... In an already very funny movie, mm-hmm, I think my biggest laugh was... In the Project Elrond scene, they brought it, and like I was the only person in my theater that was just dying of laughter that you have Project Elrond and Sean Bean is sitting at the table. Boromir's just there, and like it was totally on by accident because it was in the book, and they obviously didn't know they were casting Sean Bean. But I lost my shit.
It was wonderful.
That was great. Wonderful.
I think the execution of that was great. That, like, bouncing a pen off of someone's forehead, just something as simple as that. I love physical humor in that way, and I think that really just, again, as serious as it and important and informative as that scene was, it was still very enjoyable to watch.
Right.
So I like that, and that was because we. Watching the film, I realized we spent a lot of time with Watney, and then we got to a point where we spent probably 15 minutes with just the people on Earth, and then we went back to Watney. It's like, I liked that balance.
Yeah, but, you know, I want to go back to what you were saying, that yes, you know, Mitch did this wrong, so well then the crew of the Hermes should have been strung up for treason, because they went against what NASA... I mean, that
that's why that it bothered me at the end that Michael Pena... Mm-hmm.
was on
the next mission. Yeah. I don't think that they would have.
Because she says that you'll never fly again.
Yeah, I don't think that they could have really done anything against the astronauts themselves because of PR. Like you couldn't like punish these survival hero astronauts publicly, but like no one cares about the mission director.
Tell that to the Ed Harris character in Apollo 13. No, I disagree. Like he was the guy that brought them home. Mm-hmm. It was his idea. It wasn't like the Rich Purnell maneuver wasn't like the math checks out. Everybody who and that's the other thing that the book and the movie does, I think, really great. This guy, Rich Purnell, like, he's a little bit scatterbrained, and he's, like, all around. His boss checks out the math. The guy at JPL checks out the math. The Hermes checks out the math. And everybody's, like, going, no, his math checks out. Like, if we do this, you know, and again, they make a great point of saying both of them are risky. You know, what they didn't do in the movie is say how bad the risk was. Like, what was going to happen had they just chosen to go for Watney? Because the book is like, well, we're going to have to crash land his food. And maybe his food survives that tumble and roll. Like, that I was a little bit surprised they didn't. Again, it would have just been a line of dialogue. This wouldn't
add a scene.
I think
there is a line in there about the crash landing of the...
They did mention the crash landing. Like, and they briefly talked... There was a quick line about how... The part of the problem with the original launch was that the food liquefied.
Right.
They did mention these things, but again, they just like the potatoes and like no and like the explanation of why there are potatoes on this trip, because you usually don't bring whole food like that. Right. It wasn't needed. You didn't need to go into the explanation. They had the little nod. Yeah. I think Don't open until Thanksgiving was written on the envelope, but you didn't need to hear the explanation. You didn't need all of that stuff. It's great to know, and that's why the book is a great book. But for the movie, you had to simplify. You had to make it easier for the audience.
It just makes the argument for the audience. It makes the argument a little bit like, oh, okay, I see this reason, I see this reason. They end up going with the reason that works. I mean, either one could have worked. And I think for the purposes of the book, Andy Weir wanted a positive. He didn't want to leave the guy stranded. He said this. You know, he wanted something positive, so... You know, I think the way that they went, it makes it Star Trek III. The crew's got to go back for their guy. They make the decision. They you know, the captain goes like, look, I'm going to do this. I want to. I can't involve you folks. And again, it's totally...
It has to be unanimous.
Right. It has to be unanimous. And like what Mitch says, this really isn't up to you. Like the crew should make this decision because they're the ones who left them.
They're the ones who should go get them.
Yeah.
But there's a fair argument in that they're just heavily, they're emotional about it.
Agreed.
They're not going to make a logical scientific decision. So
I agree.
Certain cases, I think that this is why NASA has to make the decision for them.
Yeah, I say that they're smart people. That's why they're up there. And they can make that decision.
Smart people get emotional, too, though.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And if they didn't get emotional, they wouldn't go after him, and then we wouldn't have the damn movie.
F you. Yeah. F you, Mark. That empty sheet that means it uploads lighter.
I'm going to just for a second do a detour, because there's one thing that occurred in the book. Well, there's plenty of things that occurred in the book that I didn't see, but one of the moments that I thought was missing was the moment when they discover, I can't remember the character's name, when she discovers on the satellite feed that, wait a minute, that's different.
Right.
And in the book, it's an amazing moment.
Right. The Mindy Park moment?
Yeah.
No.
And in the movie, it's like, it was just kind of like,
It rolled a little bit simple.
Yeah. And I was like, that's it? And because did you remember that feeling in the book?
Yeah, absolutely.
And she discovers it, and it's like, you know.
It was a much bigger moment.
Yeah, it was a much better moment in the book.
Because she had to... She discovered it.
She discovers
right away.
It as opposed to getting this thing, and then
like
she, does it,
she didn't like in the book. I think she had to go through like a whole bunch of different photos, and like she was confused and like had to verify and all this stuff.
I think that because I didn't know that from the book, but I did recognize in watching it that I was like, oh, that kind of just
just kind of dropped
flopped up on your screen, and you were like, wow, make a call. Like it was very there wasn't a lot of struggle behind it, or I didn't really. Personally feel like she did anything special
that,
to find it. And then you constantly see her like growing throughout the film. Like she seems to get more attention, more authority or something. And I was like, you seem kind of lucky.
Well, in all honesty too, just another, again, that was one thing that didn't necessarily, like I didn't mind that change because in the book that character, you know, gets sort of kind of demoted. Because Teddy says, or no, it's Kapoor says, listen, I'm going to take you off of this. All I want you to do is focus on Watney. And she's like, so basically, you're demoting me to becoming a babysitter. He goes, you know this best, and I want you to do that. And trust me, we'll take care of you later on down the line.
She winds up getting promoted and later in the book, though.
Right, she gets promoted in the book, but in the movie they didn't make any... It just seemed to be her job to monitor.
Well, to me, it just felt like, just like Annie, she was just kind of like, oh, we brought her up, and then...
But it was also, like, just like Sarah was saying, like, in the book it felt the same way. This was a person who, like, didn't necessarily, like, apply herself. She,
she
was in the right place at the right time and got... Put center stage because of it. But that's life. That happens to people.
So
not me.
I want to talk about, because the other thing that really struck me about this movie is, number one, Ridley Scott, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I was like, where did they film this movie? Like, where did they, like, obviously it was a desert.
Yeah. Wadi Rum.
Wadi Rum, which I didn't know was a red sanded desert. And I'm, you know.
In Jordan.
Look, this movie looked beautiful.
And like, where they filmed, what is it? Mission to Mars and Red Planet, so
all other winners in the Mars category. But I mean, it looked great. And then what I really loved was just adding all those textures, the craters, but the sky. The sky was always moving. If you looked in the background, and again, an XD or premium large format, IMAX, whichever way. I mean, it looked gorgeous in 3D. And they really utilized that set or that location where it didn't look like a location to me. I felt this is as close as I can probably might get to Mars. Like this, I thought it looked
because
amazing.
You're not a math guy.
I think I could expand that. I expand that argument to most of their sets in general.
Yeah.
I thought that the production design, set design on this was extremely believable, like in the NASA rooms.
Yeah,
how
NASA was extremely jealous because that does not look like our room.
JPL's like, whoa, we got a lot bigger of a budget in this future.
So.
But I really liked it, though.
Yeah, they
look
great.
Everything looked fantastic. Yeah. Also, like, the camps he set up with the white and the silver and everything in, like, the organized bins, everything was clean. Like,
Arthur
I just
Max,
liked how every kind of set from the outside to the inside to on Earth to
it really was fully
was
really
realized. Great.
Yeah, it was fully realized.
A
from
lot
the
of
book.
Help from NASA too, and technical aspects of what a rover would look like or a HAB or whatever. All those kinds of
things. It worked really well for me.
Yeah.
The visual effects and production design. They said that the the building, you know, the spaceship that they created for the crew when they were traveling back is twice as big as the regular International Space Station. Jeez. So that was, like, very well thought out. And then, yeah. you know, going back to the desert.
Look. I like their gym.
Yeah, it was a freaking awesome gym. Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
That was one thing that I've heard people comment on was on the spaceship, like, way too much space. Yeah. Like, on a spaceship, you would never have that much room
twice
to move around.
As big as the regular International Space Station. But also the desert itself, because, Dimitri, you mentioning the sky was always changing. When they were filming it, the sky was always blue. So that was heavy VFX production and all that compositing and all the shots. And Frame Store was one of the main production companies that worked for the visual effects. And there's a whole article about, like, all the compositing shots, and a lot of the plates were filmed on red cameras. So it was a very panoramic type of scope. And we know really Scott loves, you know, the panoramic shots.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be any surprise too that that a lot of the special effects were done by this company called Frame Store. Shouldn't be a surprise that they worked on Gravity.
Yeah.
And they did about 338 shots, including a lot of the space and a lot of the seeing Mars from out of space. And, you know, again, it's we're fortunate now that the technology for theater, for cinema distribution, and how we see movies, it's just amazing. I mean, we are no longer, you know, this is above and beyond just like a scope film. We have great sound design in this movie. You know, when that storm hit at the beginning, it sounded amazing. I don't know what format
which
you
is
folks
the big
call it.
Detour from science.
The only
I had
one
an
major.
Issue with one slight. Now I don't want to sound nitpicky, but during the whole storm, when you're on a planet, they should tether themselves to each other, and they were individually walking by themselves, technically, back to the space station. And I'm like, you should tie, you know, always have some connection to your next person.
They even did that in The Thing, so you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, had they done that, they wouldn't have lost Watney. Yeah.
No, but it might have lost them all.
They might have lost them
maybe,
all.
Maybe. Well,
they probably would have lost him, because if he'd gotten speared by that thing, and if he hadn't fallen, like, the whole... They go into more of an explanation in the book. Like, the way that he survived was that he happened to land face down so that the blood dripped down into... the like where the pierce was from the thing and clotted against the freezing atmosphere of Mars, and that's the only reason that his suit didn't breach and he survived. So if he had been tethered, he probably would have landed on his back and died.
Maybe. Cut the tether.
You look out for each other by looking out for all.
I'm just going like it looked. These movies, like, this is the movie-going experience. This is a, you know, it's a great cinematic experience to see it in this format. And again, with technology and special effects and using this location, it looked beautiful. Looked beautiful.
Is it Darius Wolski? Is it the cinematographer?
Yeah, so. And actually for this film, they used three geological locations as a point of reference. The Olympus Mons, I'm sorry if I'm going to butcher this, the Schiaparelli Crater, and the Valles Marineris, which is
delicious, by the way.
Yeah. Which is a 2,500-mile Grand Canyon-style crater on the planet Mars.
Which they make look... That was another big difference between the book and the movie, is that they make this look, like, very smooth, like you could just drive straight from there. And in the book, it's very dangerous, rocky terrain that he's risking everything at, like, every turn.
Yeah.
And, like, we had mentioned it before, but, like, when he has to go through one of these craters, it ends up being
so... The driving portion is like a Sunday drive. Everything else is...
And again, I think that, for me, it was like... book made it a lot more dangerous.
How many days?
It was like 50-plus 50 days that he had,
like,
to go out there. And,
Souls.
And it did feel more risky, the drive in the book. Yeah. It feels more dangerous, but
they would have weighted it down.
And it provided for very pretty pictures.
It did. I mean,
like, it just looked gorgeous.
Thank you for bringing it back.
Well, there were overhead shots, though.
Perspective.
And where you just saw, like, his little, like, the little...
The light, the reflection.
Yeah, and it was Yeah, it was. I wanted
it
the rover reminded me of like the front part of the rover to me. The science fiction like geek here. It reminded me of the front nose to the Eagles, the spaceships that were in space 1999. Like they had that quality to it. That almost like triangular, and it looked like a toy that I would have had in like the 70s. Like they looked really cool. It's like I want to drive one of those around.
My biggest concern was I was very afraid that the rover was going to break down on him. They spent a good amount of time always explaining that he has to always stop and recharge the batteries, but I was like, what if something happened with the batteries?
Read the book.
Maybe
they should have added that.
Environmental issues end up causing problems for
the rover.
I feel like we've gone into like the sound and the cinematography and everything. From just listening to kind of reviews of people, when this first came out, I didn't hear a ton of Oscar buzz, but I feel like in the week since, because of all of the positive attention it's gotten from the audience, like the high audience reviews, it has been starting to get a little bit more Oscar mentioned. Mm-hmm. I saw this, and I was kind of trying to keep an eye out for where I thought it could be mentioned, and I know it's early in the year, so we still got a lot coming, but do you guys feel like this movie has Oscar potential in any
on technical sides?
In some categories. Yeah. I think Matt Damon not win, but I think he's definitely fair game for a nomination
at this point.
Because like the humor that he brought to it, but also like heavy emotion. Yeah. I thought he just did a fantastic job, but definitely visual effects is a clear one. Cinematography, I think, because it was very unique in that they used a lot of. I heard Adam Savage refer to it as diegetic cameras, which is a term I had never heard before.
The hell is that mean?
Like diegetic sound is like sound that is naturally occurring. So if music is coming from a radio as opposed to just being overlaid, that's diegetic sound. But and so a lot of the cameras are in his spacesuit, in the cameras
GoPro.
In the hat. Yeah, GoPros effectively. Right. But they use a lot of them, but it never felt forced or out of place.
They did a lot where you're seeing them on TV and they pull out and then you're seeing the actual conference and that kind of thing.
So I thought it was shot in a very unique way. So cinematography may be a good
one. Was I the only one that couldn't, like, the space helmet. I said, he just basically revamped his space helmet from Alien. Like, to me, it had the inner lights.
They still had
The only thing they didn't have was, like, the air tube, but they could all communicate. They had those inner lights, like, that surrounded the inner faceplate. It reminded me. I was like, they just sort of kind of retooled.
I forget where, I think, or who exactly NASA, was. It was the same, the prop was designed by the same people that did Prometheus. The spacesuits in Prometheus,
Did you, by the way, you were talking about just a second ago about...
Oscar,
what did you think?
I was trying to find it, and I do think, for me, it was a lot in the cinematography and how it was filmed. I was trying to think about the technical aspects, but I kind of think it's just going to be too heavily compared to Gravity because of subject matter, and I think looking at the two technical specs, sound, whatnot... Gravity has a leg up on it, and so I don't think it could. I don't know if it would win just because of that reference point. Because if they were nominated in the same year based on sound, I would pick Gravity.
Yeah. No, but I think it'd be nominated for the reasons you just stated. I mean, because it is on par with that, but I don't think it would win.
Yeah.
It was.
Because it's not as new.
And it was sort of more tempered than like the big visual effects and the big sound effects of Gravity.
Yeah. Exactly.
This was more about the people. That's, personally, I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Gravity because it was much more focused on people and the relationships and that side of it. Not that I didn't enjoy Gravity.
Right. Let me ask this thing, because that's the technical side. Now let's talk about the script, because here's Stu Gardner, who's got great source material.
Sure.
And what restraint not to change a bunch of stuff and make it something other than what it is. I mean, that's sometimes the hardest thing to do is put your own stamp on it and go, no, well, I'm not going to do that. I want to do this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think
for,
about
like, adaptation?
Yeah.
Adaptation? Possibility. I'm trying to think of what else is being adapted this year.
Because really, I thought he did a great job adapting
this.
I think it is. It could definitely go for adaptation.
It's really going to be, I think, a question of what else is out there. Because I don't know what I haven't, like, heard of yet.
Mm-hmm. And it's so early in the Oscar contending race.
It's a weird gut feeling, though, because sometimes a movie comes out early and you can just be like, yes, this is going to be nominated all over the place. And I really like this movie. It's easy to recommend, but maybe it's because there has been so much Oscar buzz about so many other films that are coming out, but I haven't yet been like, this is one that's going to take the cake.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because it's popular, it's well received, but it's not so well received that the Academy is going to have to go, okay, we're going to have to acknowledge this.
It's not flawless.
Yeah, and so I don't know that it'll get, because it's not as new as a Gravity, the techniques and stuff. So I don't know that it'll get that, but I think it is deserving of it. I thought, technically speaking, some of the stuff was just amazing.
Technically speaking, I think, you know, again, the possibilities, you know, you mentioned Matt Damon, which right now, that's, you know, there are 5 slots to fill. Possibility. You know, Ridley Scott's direction was pretty on point in this. I mean, I think it's his best movie in a long while.
Time, sure.
So, you know, but tech specs, you know, look, cinematography-wise, to make the Red Planet come to life, you know, in this movie, as opposed to those aforementioned ones that you had mentioned and even Robinson Crusoe, you know, goes to Mars, this, you know, Mars was a character. You know, Mars was beautiful and a monster at the same time. And I think that a lot of that was due to how it was shot, filmed, and, you know, it was discussed.
You know, and also because it was so steeped in reality.
Absolutely.
Very good point.
And I think that adaptation-wise, you know, it was a fair adaptation. It was a good adaptation. It didn't really piss me off or anything like that. So I thought
Drew, really
that's
high.
Yeah.
Well, I thought Drew. Well, it didn't make me angry. Yeah. So I thought that Drew Goddard. Look, he is a good writer. You know, I mean, he comes from, you know, he was cut from the Joss Whedon cloth. Mm-hmm. He knows how to format how to formulate a good script. So coming into The Martian, I agree with you. You know, they could have given him carte blanche and say, hey, do whatever you want. And they could have made this. My only problem is that they did make it a little bit too Hollywood with the epilogues at the end. But still, it was faithful. You know, you say it was one of the more faithful.
I'm really wondering who wanted those, because I don't know. I mean, if I was the writer, I can't imagine a writer really needing those epilogues or wanting those epilogues. That must be a studio thing.
I mean, you never know. I mean, I guess you sit with even if it was an audience, we really liked that ending. He's sat with it for how many years now? Yeah. And he's like, well, I have in my head what happened to all these people afterwards, and here's my chance.
Yeah. And I also think, though, too, the other strength that The Martian has going for it this year is that it is positive. You know, I mean, to look at it and to praise it to be, you know, positive, I think is really something special. And maybe the Academy, or maybe will come award season, maybe people will think of that, or they'll think of it as trite. Well, I don't know.
Let's look at it.
But I love that. Let's
think about it in terms of Apollo 13. Movie. What did it get? 11 nominations? Castaway got, I think, 7.
Well, unlike
totally off on that.
Unlike what apparently some people thought, this is not based on a true story. there's all these reports of people like overhearing others walking out of this movie, like, I heard that was based on a true story.
There's a Kickstarter campaign trying to raise like $70 million to get Mark Watney home. I was just reading
that.
Sounds
like somebody.
I could be.
You're kidding me.
Yeah,
I heard it's based on a real story.
There's a bunch of cases of this, like reportedly. It's on the internet, so grain of salt. People are dumb.
So we haven't vetted that.
Take that money and fund it into the actual NASA program. Oh. Be like, hey, let's send our people to Mars.
Well, $70 million wouldn't do.
There is something else that might be noted that might. I don't know. I don't know if it'll sway a needle at all. But the other cool thing is this adaptation is a first. It is a first in being that it's the first adaptation of a self-published book,
right?
That made its bones on Amazon. This guy
started
from
just blog entries.
And he wrote it. He wanted to write it as a serial thing, and no publisher was picking it up.
He didn't want to publish it. It was his friends that told him to.
He put it on his blog.
Put it online
for free.
Gave it to everybody.
Go ahead, read it.
Put it in a book and send it to me. It's online.
Okay,
fine. I'll put it up here.
Yeah. And it wasn't until Amazon.
And then you got a movie.
Yeah. Okay. And you were buying it for 99 cents on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And so this is the first self-published literature that made
and
its
what's
adaptation.
And what's the sequel going to be?
The Martian.
The Venusian.
The Venusian, yeah. The Saturn, the Jupiter ride.
Bottom of the ocean.
So. The sun.
Can we discuss...
The Martian 2. Damn it! It's like Home Alone.
No.
They left me again.
I mean, John, earlier, one of the first questions you opened this up with was, do we think they should have gone back and mm-hmm. saved Watney or Matt Damon? And I'm stealing this from someone else. Okay. I did not come up with this. But I was told that we should stop saving Matt Damon because after The Martian, Interstellar, and Saving Private Ryan, the U.S. has spent too much money
on saving.
So
there and we be really no got point. In trouble for trying to save him in Interstellar. All right.
Let's talk about money. Let's talk about budget, box office. Sheets.
Oh wait, you had wanted to mention something before.
Oh, I just had a casting.
Sure.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to know what you guys thought because there was a little bit of controversy. Because there's a couple roles that they bent races on.
Right.
Kapoor.
Well, Kapoor in the book it's Venkat Kapoor.
Yeah,
very Indian, mm-hmm. and his last name's still Kapoor. So right. I guess he's half Indian.
Yeah, he mentions it in his line. He talks about.
But they change it to Vincent to I guess make it more palatable of a name.
Well, because it spoke to his mixed race.
Yeah,
that's all.
I mean, it makes sense, I guess, with the casting.
Yeah.
But the other one, the bigger one, was Mindy Park, who in the books is Asian.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In the book, she's Asian.
Korean.
They very much just cast mm-hmm. a white woman. Mm-hmm. It's not that she did that. What's her name?
Mackenzie
Park. Davis.
Mackenzie Davis.
Not that she did a bad job by any mm-hmm. means, but it was. I was curious what you guys thought with that change because I've seen a lot of people talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And these have to be primarily though people who've read the book.
Oh,
I can't imagine that it mattered. I can't imagine.
It's interesting because I found that after watching the film, I don't see why it couldn't have been an Asian because, granted, as I don't want to say as simple, but the character of her in the film. It wasn't like emotionally in depth or whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was not the hardest character to portray on screen.
No, I think
screen.
It would have changed everything.
And I think they could have easily casted a Korean person, Korean looking person to have that same. It didn't have an emotional depth, so no. I don't see why it couldn't.
Mackenzie Davis, like she's on *Halt and Catch Fire*, which I think someone involved in that show was also involved in the movie. Is how that whole shook out. But like, she's not a draw. Mm-hmm. Necessarily that like
especially
people are
role.
Like I gotta go see Mackenzie Davis
because she has this minor role in this huge movie
so in like an age where diversity is a big issue mm-hmm. it seemed like it right. wasn't
they should have just kept it how it was written and not changed it probably why that happened, what politics are involved, which how many contracts you had to sign, if you did this movie you get this one, who knows but based on the depth of the character, the screen time, and the emotional challenges, it was not someone you needed to bring in an A-list actor for. You could have easily given it to someone who is either undiscovered or of the race that was originally written. It was an easy play to have diversity.
That's what I'm saying. It could have been an easy character.
Okay, so the studio is arguing, look, I got Chiwetel. Am I saying that right? He wants to be in this. I want him in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do I make that work?
Yeah.
Because they're looking at this from a strictly numbers thing and they're going, he's a great draw for me and he'll add to my gravitas about Oscar buzz.
Sure.
I got him in the movie. Why not use him if I mm-hmm. can? Is that a bad thing? Because I'm not using...
An Indian?
Yeah, because who do I have? Do I have somebody on the same level as Chiwetel?
That's fair. There is an argument for racially blind casting and whether or not that can go both
that's
ways.
It's an interesting thing. Which we'll never
because
solve
it's,
here.
It's meant to be used to get more diversity into movies, but in this case it was used to go the opposite
way.
We
may not solve it, but we will... talk about it.
Yeah, I think it would have been
we're never going to solve it.
I think it would have been great to have different races in this, mm-hmm. or more of a diversity, because this was, in a way, a more worldly type of situation. Mm-hmm. The whole world was watching this. Mm-hmm. So it would have been more understandable to have different races be a part of this situation. It's a community.
Well, let's face it.
They did bring in the Chinese.
The JPL was run by, I forgot what ethnicity is.
Well, he was Asian. I don't remember. Yeah, I can't remember Asian. Specifically.
Okay. Rich Purnell, Donald Glover. I don't know what he was in the book.
The guy at JPL, he plays Genghis Khan in Marco Polo. He's actually a really good actor.
Yeah, he's a good actor. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Disembodied voice from another world. Thank you.
I don't know that they ever really got into Rich Purnell one way or the other.
So here's an instance where that could have been a white guy in the book. I don't know. And they chose something.
And the diversity in the ship.
I'm going to disagree with that because there are mentions. Oh, I wish I've only seen this movie once, so I can't pull up every line. Mm-hmm. But I do believe they mentioned that he has relatives.
In China.
His uncle.
I'm talking about
Donald Glover, who you
talking about. Oh, I thought you were talking about the guy from JPL.
No, I'm saying the Rich Purnell character, but it could have been. I don't know what he was in the book.
I forget.
I can't remember, but if he was if it was a white guy, I don't remember.
I think it was, but that it may have just been. I don't know that it was specified.
Again speaks to the point. It may have been an unspecified ethnicity, and they picked one.
Yeah. Overall, I think that the movie did a good job having a diverse cast. I thought it was worth discussing.
Again, one other difference in the book was. And they sort of allude to this in the movie, in the epilogue, when they're on the Ares 4 mission or 5 mission.
It'd be 5, yeah.
And we see what was the character's name?
Martinez.
We see Martinez, and next to Martinez was a Chinese person. Now in the book, there was mentioned like when they were negotiating, and the Chinese come to help and at a good time, it was like bartered sort of.
Right,
it's like, hey, if you can help us out, we're going to give you. We'll put one of your guys onto our next Ares mission, which a line of dialogue. Mm-hmm.
The one thing I was really upset about ethnicity is Sean Bean, really, at NASA? How did that happen? How did we that limey bastard?
My problem with him is that we let him live. His career died, I guess.
Yeah. But the thing, watching it, I was going
to say we should have killed him.
Well, it's Sean Bean. Yeah.
You have to kill him.
But his career died, so it's okay.
But the thing, watching it, I was aware, just as an audience here, I was like, wow, I'm actually rooting for Sean Bean. He's a good character in this film.
Yeah. I root for him all the time.
He's usually a good guy at the end.
Something golden.
I always root for him.
In Game of Thrones.
We go into numbers. Game of Thrones, yeah.
Well, production budget was at $108
million. Mm-hmm.
Compared
to think about like movies like... What came out? Tomorrowland.
Oh my God! $180 for I don't know.
In $155 when you talk about the advertising and hard drives.
I was surprised at how little it was based on what I saw on the screen. I'm going, really?
Yeah, Ridley Scott.
Very surprised.
Again, very, 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 very. It was very.
Very
it's good for Ridley Scott that he got to get this out and do this. And thus far, it's opening weekend. It came in at number one. Mm-hmm. Not a big surprise. I mean, I think you were talking about it earlier.
But they were forecasting it under what it actually performed, so that's cool.
So 54 million, let's say 55. But, and again, I think this just speaks to, it reaches a broad audience and being good. And it makes, as the Boston Globe put it, it makes science sexy. It brings the science like
that far.
Well, but it makes it makes it fun and it makes it, which is really cool.
I am not a math person either, but the way they were processing it in their mental thought train, I was like, these are very smart people. Huh? I would not mess with them.
And thus far, we're looking at $72 million so far. Not too bad. Foreign, this movie's doing all right. It's at about 52 plus estimated. Mm-hmm. So all in, it's at 117 or 120, let's say, if you want to throw in today. Not too shabby. Too shabby at all.
And word of mouth is great. Word of mouth is great.
Yeah, it's an A on CinemaScore, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
94 for audience.
Their word of mouth will hopefully, it'll at least go through October. You know, and then going into November,
because we got what's some real competition right now. Not,
Pan is coming out.
Oh, well, Steve Jobs is coming.
Yeah,
I just don't see
Jobs
being
Goosebumps.
The spectacle that this is, I don't see them being able.
How do you guys feel about the rewatchability of this film?
I would definitely rewatch.
I'll rewatch it on Blu-ray. I won't pay to see it again in a theater.
All right.
I would see it again back
3D.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you see it 3D?
I did, and I'm a big proponent of 3D, and I thought that this movie used it perfectly. Mm-hmm. From everything from like the heads-up display, like feeling like it's really imprinted, like separate from the background, and just like the expanse of Mars. It was it was used subtly, which is the best way that 3D is used.
It was used smartly. And I think, too, you know, just for a second, again, we're able to watch movies now at a really great time because 3D almost died in the slab because of Hollywood. And listen, you know, for the most part, 3D was brought back not as a gimmick, but not only as a gimmick, but it was for the exhibitors to tack on extra fee. I mean, bottom line. And so Hollywood would churn out, like, you know, a Clash of the Titans. They would do a shitty job in
poor
converting.
Clash of the Titan. That always gets good.
Well, because, well, that was the,
your
like,
disdain issue,
that was the first one to come out of the gate. And that was the first one to get noticed because they took like only 3 months. Like, it was a last minute decision by Warner Brothers to do it. It was, we want more money. So it was an obvious
cash money grab. It was
done poorly and also made people sick.
Yeah. And it was, and people thought, and then since too, like there were a couple of other movies that came out that the 3D was just not working. So due to some groups like the National Association of Theater Owners who were lobbying, campaigning, we got, you know, Hollywood, you gotta do better. And then thankfully, you know, we have somebody like James Cameron who comes around and says, look, 3D is great. It can be fantastic. You gotta do it right. Mm-hmm. And since then, since like Avatar, Hollywood has looked at it a little bit, well, they've taken it more seriously. They don't want to leave money on the table. And when you look at some of the movies that have come out since then, especially, like I said, within the past 3 years, okay, you know, Gravity looked amazing. This past summer, we've had some great-looking 3D movies like Mad Max with superb cinematography. When you get the right elements there, 3D and large screen format really...
The right elements and the right type of movie.
Right. No, it shouldn't... they're using it more judiciously now, which is fantastic. They should. But I just say it's all about the movie-going experience.
So I saw the Notebook in 3D, and it really does not.
You didn't think it had it.
See, I thought it made the rain scene just like pop.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. So. Well, I'm glad you. I missed that one. Mm-hmm. So
you got to go.
You know, but we are. It's great now that finally Hollywood is can get it right to provide this kind of an entertainment. So now I don't feel that the upcharge is a soaking. Because listen, the exhibitors are making money off of this upcharge, as are the studios. So at least they're putting the quality up on screen.
Do you see what you did?
No.
I think the great thing.
I still really, really enjoyed it. I am one of the people who sometimes gets headaches from 3D or any type. It's just something that typically affects me a little more. I also can like see. I will see like the frames get blurry really easy compared to, I guess, most people. Like some people, I guess it's
you
just
are
a thing.
She's in a, believe it or
outlier.
Not, there have been tests. No, there have been tests about people because people were getting sick, and you are in a low percentage of people that actually, no matter if it's fantastic 3D. They will still feel
I'm very sensitive to it. And I also am really sensitive to, like, if any scope of the camera, like, changes, like, I notice really strangely.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yep.
So I'm fine. It was great in regular form. Okay.
Yeah. I think the great thing was, for this film, I didn't really have that sense of claustrophobic. As Gravity was. It's like they purposely made the audience on edge and made everyone feel like she's never going to get back alive.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't on a planet.
Whereas this one, she was closer to Earth, and she was in reaching distance that she can get back to Earth. And I felt with Martian is that there was a greater scope, and he was more bound to the planets. Like, I didn't feel there was always moments where he's just going to straight up die.
Right.
And watching him, you see him go about his everyday life on that planet, and I didn't get that claustrophobic, like, I fear for his life.
Yeah. And I will give Ridley Scott some credit, too. Like, regardless of what I thought about Prometheus or Gods and or God the and Ten Kings. Regardless of what I thought of those, again, he used large screen format and 3D in those movies. I mean, you know, when the plagues start hitting the people in Egypt, I mean, it looked amazing.
That was scary.
You know, he's obviously embraced the format where, you know, but he just makes it look fantastic. You know, so, you know, and I think The Martian looked even better than Prometheus and Gods and Kings, and I thought it was amazing, stunning.
I think the thing that also helps is that we've been getting maybe one movie out in space a year now. It's not to the point where it's just getting saturated. Mm. I mean, granted, I love the comic book movies and like Marvel and DC, all the movies that they pump out, but it's to the point where there's just a lot going on and there's a lot of stories and everybody's tying to each other. Whereas I feel like galaxy movies or movies that take out in space, it's not to the point where it's overwhelming. We get it all the time now. We still love every movie that
We're close though, because like Sci-Fi Channel alone in the next year is doing The Expanse.
Right.
It's a new show.
Yep.
They're adapting Childhood's End, which is a great book, and I love the book, and I'm excited to see it. And they're also doing 3001. The Final Odyssey.
Yeah, and they're also doing Red Shirts as well, which is a John Scott. Red Shirts and what's his first book Scalzi wrote that I can't think of right now.
Locked In?
No, the old, I forget, Lost Colony. But in any case,
I think it's the point where it's like the audience, us as viewers, we're not tired of seeing out of space.
Oddly enough, I did.
It's like a cycle.
For some reason, because it was so steeped in reality and it wasn't too far in the future, I didn't really see this as a galaxy movie, even though it's on a different planet and the whole thing for some reason. I think the human story of it,
it's a human story of it. I mean, any good science fiction should be about, you know, like in one way, shape, or form, the human condition. But I think what makes a movie like The Martian somewhat refreshing is the fact that it's not a tentpole superhero movie. It's giving audiences, and they're actually sort of kind of gearing it to an older audience. Like, they're not necessarily marketing it. That's why they had the 70s disc. Yeah.
I think it's going to inspire a lot of 10-year-olds to become astronauts.
Well, but one would hope. You know, if the family takes the 10-year-old to go see this,
that's why it's
PG-13.
Yeah, we get.
I get that.
Can we inspire some like congressmen to like give NASA some money?
Yeah,
maybe. Maybe that's why NASA was so supportive of this.
Oh yeah,
it makes NASA look very, like very amazing
for that reason. By the way,
they're like, see, we could be doing this. We just found water. It's
we could be leaving people on Mars and then go getting them.
Yes.
Wait.
we can bring them back.
Sounds fantastic. So,
and we can do the math.
We can inspire all these people, which was another point that I'm like, hold on, wait a second. In the day and age where you can watch all of that unfold from your cell phone, no one's gathering in Times Square. New Yorkers are not going out to Times Square a big TV.
I disagree with you right there. I disagree with you on something of this epic level.
You'd have them in bars. People would be going to bars gathering in a bar.
They still go out there every New Year's.
Those are not New Yorkers. Those are tourists.
They
could be tourists there too in Trafalgar Square. I would disagree with you. If something were this big, and that's the other cool thing that's positive about this. Look, you know, as a society, you know, we cannot be nice people to other people. But when you seriously why are there like different wars and stuff, and but what brings us together as a whole as a planet?
Disaster.
Disaster. Mm-hmm. Like, and when you think about it, that's when people, like, if there is a flooding in New Orleans, everybody will come to help. If there is a tsunami,
unless you're the government.
What I'm saying is it's a positive aspect that it's one thing, and when you think about this movie, this was saving one man, getting this man, you know, who was thought to be dead. They had a funeral for him, and surprise, he's alive. And it is a global It is a communal thing and trying to get him back. It's not just NASA. It's not just JPL. The Chinese come on board. And
but you notice along in all those people gathering to help, they all have their own particular agenda along
which
with
I
saving.
Like. Yeah.
No,
I
do too. I think it's great.
But I agree. A whole community can come together. Yeah. I mean, just another example, when the Chilean miners were trapped underground for as long as they were, the whole world was watching them being rescued.
Absolutely.
I was one of those people. So, and granted, there's a movie coming out about that. So
yes, of course
I believe
and you will feel claustrophobic in that one.
Yes. I believe in a situation where it can, out of disaster, people can come together to have hope.
Right. And that, I think, is a very positive message that should be talked more about. And, you know, I'm glad that we have the opportunity to do it here.
On that hopeful note, let's wrap up for our last thoughts. Sarah.
I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I always appreciate if a movie has some rewatchability potential.
Did you say you would go back to the theater and watch it or wait for Blu-ray?
I will watch this again. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to go back to the theater, but I think that's more about timing of the year rather than anything else. But I will watch this again, and I will be excited, I think, to watch this again. And it's easy to recommend. For a 2.5-hour movie, I thought that the length and the detail was appropriate. I thought that how they glorified science was sexy, as Marissa said. And so I thought they did a really nice job. And it made me encouraged to read the book, which I always think is a nice note when I feel like it is also something I could enjoy, and that I wasn't completely just satisfied with the movie. I would like to know the little details about
the movie. I think if you like the humor in the movie, you'll love the book.
Great.
Yeah. Marissa, what are your last
thoughts? I think this was great. Definitely, I will be watching this again because there are so many, a lot of things were happening technically, a lot of things were happening politically, and this is a movie I love. I always love reading books before I go to watch a movie, and I didn't have the time to read the book, but watching this movie was so good. It makes me want to read the book, like you said, Sarah. So I'm definitely going to read the book eventually. And I think the cast was great. The acting was great. Just overall, I loved every department. And it was really great performances and execution on all ends.
Zach?
I really liked it as somebody who read the book. I thought it was spot on. It was what I didn't get every scene from the book, but it was, I got what I wanted out of it. Every one of the cast was the character that they were portraying, and that's huge praise. As a in doing a geek watch, I felt like I needed to share this. There's a whole, like, because Kate Mara's character and Sebastian Stan's character get together, I'm like, Sue Storm just hooked up with the Winter Soldier. Yeah.
Wow, the fact that you can, I'm sure she's really happy that you just referenced Sue Storm. No, I'm kidding. So, listen, I really enjoyed this movie. It'll probably end up being one of my favorites this year. I think it was very well done. It's a decent, for me, it was a decent adaptation. Like I said, I thought that there were some changes that I was on board with, other changes. I couldn't figure out why they did it. But regardless, beautiful to look at. Go see it at a movie theater. Go see it in, premium large format, 3D if you can. It's worth the $20. It really is. You'll come out and you'll feel good about going to a movie. You'll come out and go, hey, that's really positive. I like that. And in this day and age, I think that says a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was a great movie-going experience. I really thought they captured the book on film. I thought they did a great job. But the same sadness, joy, desperation, everything that I felt when I read the book, I felt when I watched the movie. And it was a refreshing experience for me because you don't always get that in adaptation, so I really enjoyed that.
And when I'm listening to the music, we didn't talk soundtrack, but I really felt this soundtrack, especially on the soundtrack. I think there's a track called "Making Water," which is really, it was subtle and great, and I thought the soundtrack worked to this movie very well, especially while it's traversing over the Mars expanse. Yes. I thought it was great.
Hot stuff didn't get to you?
Well, the music is playing us out, so we want to thank you very much for tuning in. We will talk to you next time on Anatomy of a Movie.
Stay cool.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.